You're listening to ESL Podcast English Cafe, number 519. This is English as a Second Language Podcast, English Cafe, episode 519. I'm your host, Dr. Jeff McQuillan, coming to you from the Center for Educational Development in beautiful Los Angeles, California. Visit our website at eslpod.com. Become a member of ESL Podcast and download this episode's learning guide. What is a learning guide? Well, I'm glad you asked. It's an 8 to 10 page guide we provide for all of our current episodes that gives you a complete transcript of everything we say. It also gives you cultural notes, comprehension questions, a complete glossary with definitions and additional sample sentences for the key vocabulary we discuss on each episode. On this cafe, we're going to talk about a famous American author by the name of Tom Wolfe. We're also going to talk about a famous rock band from the 20th century. Remember that? The band is called Aerosmith. And as always, we'll answer a few of your questions. Let's get started. Thomas Kennerly Wolfe Jr. was born in March of 1930 in Richmond, Virginia. Richmond is the capital of the state of Virginia, located about 100 miles south of Washington, D.C., our nation's capital. Tom Wolfe graduated from Washington and Lee University in 1951 and later went on to study at Yale University, where he got his Ph.D. in 1957. A PhD, sometimes called a doctorate of philosophy, is the highest university degree that you can get. It usually requires a master's degree, or at least the equivalent of a master's degree. Typically, for a PhD in the social sciences, things such as sociology or anthropology, or in the humanities, it takes about 5 years total to get a PhD, including a master's. Now, sometimes it takes longer than that. Some people are able to get a master's degree in 2 years and then a PhD in 4 years. I took 4 years to get my PhD in Applied Linguistics and Education here in beautiful Los Angeles, California, at the University of Southern California. After Wolfe finished his PhD, he did not become a university professor, as is common with many people who get a PhD, including me. Wolfe instead became a journalist, a person who writes stories for newspapers, magazines, and nowadays radio, television, and the internet. He worked for a few newspapers, including the Washington Post, which is the main newspaper in Washington, D.C. In the 1960s, he started working at magazines as well, including New York Magazine and Esquire magazine. By 1977, he became the editor of Esquire magazine. An editor is a person who is in charge of deciding which stories get printed. The editor is the most important person in terms of the content of a magazine. Wolf also wrote articles for Esquire, and interestingly enough, he was something of an artist. That is, he also was able to draw, and so he drew pictures for the magazines he worked for. When Wolf was just a writer for Esquire back in 1963, he began writing stories in a way that was very different from most other journalists at that time. In fact, one of the reasons Tom Wolfe is famous as a writer in the United States was because of this different method of journalism he helped develop. He would research stories, as all journalists do, or at least we hope they do, and he would learn the facts about what happened. But he would write the story not as a traditional news report, but rather almost as if it were a story in a book. Instead of just telling the facts, he would make it into a story. He would give lots of description about the people and the places involved in the story. And since it was a story, he also gave it some drama. Drama, D-R-A-M-A, here means some emotion, some feeling, some excitement. We also use the word drama to talk about plays in a theater. But here, it means emotion or feeling. This helped make the stories not only easier to read, but more interesting for readers. This way of writing news stories became known as new journalism. Wolf was one of the first writers to write in this manner, but there were other writers during the 60s that also began to use this new way of reporting true stories. The writer Truman Capote was also known for writing in this new journalism style. Wolf's first report, written in the new journalism style, was about a group of teenagers here in California. These teenagers would put a lot of time and money into creating what we might describe as flashy cars. Flashy, F-L-A-S-H-Y, means very noticeable, attracting a lot of attention. When the car went down the street, you would look and go, wow. These cars eventually got the name of hot rods. Well, Wolf's story about these hot rods was first published in Esquire in 1963 with a very unusual title. It was one of the most unusual titles for a magazine article anyone had ever invented, I think. It includes not just real words, but sounds that you might associate with the story. Now, remember, this is a story about hot rods, about very fancy cars that go fast. And so the title of the article was, "There Goes Vroom Vroom, That Candy-Colored Thump, Tangerine Flake Streamline Baby, Rah! Around the Bend, Boom." I told you it was weird. What Wolf was trying to do was to convey or give the feeling of these cars moving fast down the street. And so he used sounds, converted into words, of course, in the title of the article in order to give that idea. The article eventually was published in 1964, a year later, as a book called The Candy-Colored Tangerine Flake Streamline Baby. Let me briefly explain the words in the title. The first term is candy-colored. Candy-colored would be something that has the color of candy, in this case, very bright colors. Now, interestingly, Wolf misspelled the words on purpose. Instead of spelling it with a C, because both candy and color begin with the letter C, he spelled them with a K. The second term in the title is tangerine flake. Tangerine is a small orange-colored fruit, similar to a small orange. And so something that is being described as tangerine has an orange color. A flake, F-L-A-K-E, is a very small piece of something, almost impossible to see. Streamline, S-T-R-E-A-M-L-I-N-E, describes something that is very smooth, something that can go very fast. The term baby is sometimes used to describe something that you love, something that you care for, something that you've given a lot of attention to. People will sometimes say about something that they've created or spent a lot of time on, that's my baby. You could talk about a book you're writing is being your baby, something that you care for almost as if it were your actual son or daughter. So the title of the book, The Candy-Colored Tangerine Flake Streamline Baby, became one that people noticed. They said, well, what kind of book is that? And the book, in fact, included not just the article about the hot rods that Wolf had written, but a collection of different articles that Wolf had written during the early 1960s, including one about Las Vegas and about the boxer Cassius Clay, who would later change his name to Muhammad Ali. It was this book that made Wolf famous as a journalist, and he continued to write stories in the new journalism style throughout the 60s and 70s. In 1968, he published another famous book, The Electric Kool-Aid Acid Test. This was a book about the drug culture in the United States during the late 1960s, when certain people were taking drugs that, among other things, would cause them to hallucinate. To hallucinate, H-A-L-L-U-C-I-N-A-T-E, means to see or feel things that aren't real. One of the more popular drugs during this time was called popularly acid, A-C-I-D, which is why the word acid is in the title of the book. By the time I was in high school, Tom Wolfe was already well known as a writer. I, in fact, read one of his books in high school called The Painted Word, which was a book about modern art. He wrote another book about art called From Bauhaus to Our House in 1981, which I read in college. So I was familiar with Wolfe's work even during my high school years. Wolfe's most famous book, however, was published in 1979, and it was called The Right Stuff. The Right Stuff told the story of the first American program to put people into outer space. It was a book about the early astronauts in American history. A few years later, in 1983, the book was made into a famous movie called The Right Stuff, starring Ed Harris and Dennis Quaid. Although Wolfe was famous for writing nonfiction books, he also wrote some fictional books. Fiction, F-I-C-T-I-O-N, is writing about things that are not real, things that are imagined. We usually associate fiction with novels. Wolfe wrote a novel that was published in 1987 called The Bonfire of the Vanities, which was also later made into a book. A bonfire, B-O-N-F-I-R-E, is a large fire built outdoors, usually as part of a celebration. Vanity, V-A-N-I-T-Y, is usually the characteristic of a person who thinks about himself all the time, who is always worried about how he looks and how other people think about him. However, the term bonfire of the vanities actually refers to an event that took place back in Florence in the late 15th century. There, vanities referred to anything that might cause you to sin, anything that might lead you to do something morally wrong. It sometimes happened during this period that a religious leader would invite people to bring things that might cause them to commit a sin and throw them into the fire. Tom Wolfe used this idea of the bonfire of the vanities as a metaphor for his book. The book was made into a movie in 1990 starring Tom Hanks and Bruce Willis, although neither the book nor the movie was particularly popular. Wolfe continues to write. He published his most recent book in 2012 called Back to Blood. Although he left journalism to become a fiction writer, he really continues to be known in most people's minds as one of the founders of new journalism. It was there, really, that most people think he did his best work. If you're interested in reading a very different kind of journalism, one that has influenced nonfiction writing in the U.S. over the past 30 years, try to pick up a book by Tom Wolfe. I think you might enjoy it. We turn now briefly to our second topic, which is the rock band Aerosmith. Aerosmith was started in 1970 by the singer Steven Tyler, the guitarist Joe Perry, the drummer Joey Kramer, and another guitarist named Brad Whitford. These four young men created a sound that combined the sounds of American rock and roll with British bands that were popular during this period, including the Rolling Stones. This was considered a unique or one-of-a-kind sound, although it was later copied by many other groups. Their first album was released or made available to buy in 1973, but it wasn't until their later albums, their second, third, and fourth albums, that the band really became popular. Their most famous album was their third album, called Toys in the Attic, which was released in 1975. An attic, A-T-T-I-C, is the very top part of a house. It's actually a space between the ceiling and the roof of the house. So if you have, as I do, a house that has two levels or two stories, the attic is located in the space between the ceiling of the rooms on my second floor and the roof of the house. People who live in houses that have attics, and not all houses have attics, often use them to store old things. So toys in the attic might refer to toys that you played with as a child but no longer use. I'm not exactly sure. The important point here is that Aerosmith's Toys in the Attic became very famous, and some of their most famous songs, including Walk This Way and Sweet Emotion, were on this album. The style of Aerosmith's music was what we might describe as hard rock. It also had some elements of heavy metal. I have to say that although I grew up during the 1970s, I was in junior high and high school during this period, I never really was a big fan of Aerosmith, but I knew that they were very popular. During the 1980s, the band members, as rock band members do, had some personal problems, related, of course, to drug and alcohol use. Joel Perry, one of the members of the band, left to start his own career as a soloist. A soloist, S-O-L-O-I-S-T, is a musician who performs by himself, not with a band. In 1986, Aerosmith was no longer a popular band. However, another musical group decided to record one of Aerosmith's most famous songs, or at least do their own version of the song. This group, a rap group called Run DMC, recorded Walk This Way, but in a very different version, a different style, more of a rap style. The song became popular, and Run DMC and Aerosmith recorded a famous music video where both of the groups took turns singing lines of the song. It's a very easy song to remember because there aren't very many words in it. The expression walk this way means walk in the way that I'm walking, walk as I am walking, using the same movements that I'm using. There isn't much to say about the song, walk this way, talk this way, and they just repeat that a couple of times. And at the end of the chorus, of the repeating part of the song, they say, "Aw, just give me a kiss." Well, people loved this new version of the song, and it helped make Aerosmith popular again. So Joe Perry, the person who had left the band to become a soloist, returned, and Aerosmith began recording albums again in the late 1980s. The band members also stopped using drugs and alcohol and dedicated themselves just to making music. The term to dedicate, D-E-D-I-C-A-T-E, oneself, means to focus all your attention on a certain thing. In some ways, the band's albums released in the late 80s and early 90s were even more popular than the songs they recorded in the 1970s. These songs included Janie's Got a Gun, Crying, and one of my favorites, Crazy. In 1997, Aerosmith sang a song called I Don't Want to Miss a Thing for a very famous movie at the time called Armageddon. The title of the song, I Don't Want to Miss a Thing, means I don't want to not see, hear, or experience something. I'm so interested in it. I'm so excited about it. I don't want to not be able to experience it. I want to pay attention to everything that's going on. In 2001, Aerosmith was inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. To be inducted, I-N-D-U-C-T-E-D, means to be allowed to become a member of a special group. Usually we use this verb when we're talking about someone who is made a member of or made part of some group of the very best people in a certain line of work, in a certain field. So we have, for example, the Baseball Hall of Fame, which includes the very best baseball players in history. The Hall of Fame is usually a museum that you can go and visit, and it has exhibits, it has displays of the person's work, their photographs, and so forth. You don't actually live in the Hall of Fame. To be inducted just means that you are considered a member of that group. Sometimes people are inducted into Hall of Fames after they die. But in the case of Aerosmith, they didn't die before they got inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Where is the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame? Well, you can visit it in Cleveland, Ohio, which is probably one of the only interesting things there is to do in Cleveland, Ohio. at least that I know of. Now let's answer some of the questions you have sent to us. Our first question comes from Alexei, A-L-E-X-E-I, in Ukraine. Alexei wants to know the difference between convince and compel. To convince, C-O-N-V-I-N-C-E, means to cause someone to believe that something is true, or to get someone to agree with you about something. I want to convince you that the Los Angeles Dodgers is the best baseball team in America. I'm going to give you reasons why you should believe that is true. I want to convince you. To compel, C-O-M-P-E-L, is very different. To compel is to force someone to do something. I'm going to compel you to leave this room. Maybe I'll take a chair and start threatening you in order to force you, to make you leave this room. Often we use this word, this verb, when we're talking about, say, the police or the government compelling someone to do something. They're forcing them to do something. They have no choice. Or I suppose if they don't do it, their choice is to go to prison, to go to jail. Now, interestingly enough, when this verb becomes an adjective, compelling, C-O-M-P-E-L-L-I-N-G, it means very interesting. So interesting, you can't stop reading, or you can't stop watching, or you can't stop listening to it. So if someone says this book is compelling, he means this book is so good, so interesting, or perhaps contains a message so powerful that you have to pay attention to it. It doesn't mean that it forces you to do something, unless, I suppose, you consider it to be forcing you to pay attention. But it's forcing you to pay attention because it's so interesting, it's so important, or so powerful. I apologize for my voice today. I'm not sure why I'm not able to talk without sounding like I'm a frog. Gianpaolo, G-I-A-N-P-A-O-L-O, in Italy, wants to know the difference between the words latter, L-A-T-T-E-R, and last, L-A-S-T. Well, let me start with the last word I mentioned there, the word last. Last means final, something that comes at the end or after all the other items in a sequence. Let's say I'm going to drink 3 cups of coffee this morning. The 3rd cup of coffee is my last cup. It's the final one. There will be no other cups of coffee that I will drink this morning. Your wife may tell you, this is the last time I'm going to remind you about our anniversary. She means she's not going to remind you again. She's not going to say anything else to you again. This is the last time, the final time. Maybe she's reminded you 10 times before. Well, this is the last time. The 11th time is the final time in this example. Latter means the second of 2 things or 2 groups of things. The word latter is usually paired with the word former, F-O-R-M-E-R. An example will make this word easier to understand. I have a choice between chicken and beef for dinner tonight. I want the latter. That means I want the second of those two options, those two choices, which is beef. I could say, you know what? Actually, I want the former. That would mean I would want chicken. Former is the first of two things. Latter is the second of two things. Now, don't confuse latter with another word that is pronounced exactly the same, which is L-A-D-D-E-R. That ladder is a set of steps that you climb to get up on top of your house or high up on the side of a building. Many people think that these words should be pronounced differently, and sometimes you will hear people overpronounce the words when there might be some confusion. That is, they will pronounce them in a way that we wouldn't normally pronounce them. They'll say, for example, the latter. Notice how that's different than ladder. Or they might say, if they're referring to the thing that you climb up to get to the top of your house, a ladder instead of ladder. However, in normal conversation, these two words are pronounced the same. Our last question today comes from Vitor, V-I-T-O-R, in Brazil. The question has to do, interestingly enough, with a concept that is related to the ones we just mentioned. The word is ultimate, U-L-T-I-M-A-T-E. Ultimate can, in some instances, mean the same as last or final. Usually you'll hear the word ultimate with the words goal or aim or purpose when it means last or final. And it really has the connotation of meaning the most important. My ultimate goal is to retire in Hawaii. I have lots of goals, I have lots of aims, I have lots of purposes, but the most important, the one at the end of all those other purposes and goals, is to retire in Hawaii when I'm ready to retire, when I'm ready to stop working. So even though if you look this word up in the dictionary, you'll see the word final as one of the definitions, it's usually used in a way that means a little bit more than just final. It often means most important, which is another definition of this word, the greatest or perhaps most extreme. Nowadays, people will often use ultimate not as an adjective but as a noun. They'll say, this is the ultimate in something. This is the ultimate in cars. That means this is the very best car you can possibly find. It's the greatest car. Or you could say, this restaurant is the ultimate in fine dining. It's the very best restaurant possible to get a very good meal, which, of course, is the reason you go to a restaurant, right? If you have a question or comment, you can email us. Our email address is eslpod@eslpod.com. From Los Angeles, California, I'm Jeff McQuillan. Thank you for listening. Come back and listen to us again right here on The English Cafe.
ESL Podcast English Cafe was written and produced by Dr. Jeff McQuillan and Dr. Lucy Say.
This podcast is copyright 2015 by the Center for Educational Development.